Uncommon Commons is a horror anthology podcast written by George Plank and Alex Vitale. Content warnings can be found in the episode description. Today's story is Incarceration, written by Alex Vitale.
What are you doing, John? Don't tell me you want to play another board game. I don't think I can handle any more rounds of that stupid one you love.
Huh? Oh, hey, Jane. No, this isn't a board game, and for the record, Oxytrifenodextrooslonumodexicurl's House of Fun is a delight to play.
What is this, then?
Oh, it's a It's a spirit board.
Why? If you want to talk to Frederick, all you have to do is find a mirror.
Hey, guys.
No, I don't want to talk to Frederick. Wait, no, I didn't mean it like that.
Now look what you've done. He got depressed and left the mirror. I'll be finding him in my compacts for weeks. Whatever the reason for the Awagi board, it had better be worth all this.
I certainly hope so, Jane. Do you remember a while back how I thought someone might be listening to our conversations?
Like a paranoid nutcase? Yeah?
Well, I wouldn't put it like that.
I mean, absolutely certifiable. Stark raving hysterical, gone up the river to visit your fifth cousins. Absolutely, Mom and Dad. A couple of screws loose, a few eggs short of a basket.
Okay, I get it!
I'm glad that's behind us. So, what did you say your plan was?
I'm not sure I want to tell you anymore.
Out with it.
Okay. After my very thorough search of the apartment building, I wasn't able to find a single camera or microphone, except for the ones we used a little over a year ago now, and there was nothing new on the tape. But still, I couldn't shake the feeling that I was being watched. Then it hit me. What do you call it when you feel a presence, but there is no physical evidence that it exists?
Faith.
Ghosts.
Right.
So, if there were any spirits, I thought I should try and reach out to them and communicate with them a little.
John, there are a number of reasons why that wouldn't work. But my evening's free, and I'd like to watch you fail. Where did you get that thing, anyway?
Oh, it kind of just appeared to me.
Let me guess. You looked away for 1 second, and then it was on the dining room table.
Close. I was walking down the hallway, and I turned the corner, and it was floating, suspended in midair.
And you took it?
And I took it.
All right. I'm willing to believe your story so far.
You believe me, Jane?
No, but I'm willing to. Do you know how to use one of these... Where's the planchette?
The what?
The planchette. It looks like an arrow. It's about yay big.
Oh, I left that in the hallway. I thought they installed some new floating thermostat. I'll be right back.
Unlike John, I don't need to be told to check the mail. Who am I talking to? You want to hear a story, little guy? I think we were followed, whispered Basil, peering through the slats on the window. There's someone outside. It's just a wastrel, replied Thaddeus. He waved Basil away from the window, ushering him into the parlor. With his hands firmly planted on Basil's shoulders, he seated him on the dusty sofa. You can't be certain of that. Thaddeus fell on the sofa next to him. Oh, but I can. Gave him money on the way in. Poor bastard is drunk out of his mind. He'll wander off soon enough. As if to demonstrate, he reached for his own bottle of liquor and popped it open. He brought it with the express purpose of sharing it with Basil. It seemed as though he must have gotten thirsty on the walk over. Nearly half of the bottle was empty. Basil, with a shaking hand, snatched the bottle away and took a swig. He slumped against Thaddeus. I'm just worried, Tad, if we're caught... We won't be, Thaddeus replied firmly. He tipped the bottom of the bottle upward, encouraging Basil to drink more whiskey. For his part, Basil nursed the bottle tentatively. The liquor did its job, and soon his tremors had subsided. He and Thaddeus stayed in each other's embrace for a long time, a silence draping over them like a blanket. The only noise to be heard was the singing of the wastrel outside, and even that tapered off as he walked away. Distantly, a woman's voice called for her daughter to come in for supper. It was a long while before either man spoke to each other. It was Basil who broke the silence. I just... He slurred. Feel watched. You say that nearly every time we meet. That was why we started coming to this blasted place to begin with. because you were getting edgy, and this is the last place anyone would look," Basil interjected with a wave of his hand. I know, but... "But nothing," Thaddeus insisted, cupping Basil's hands in his own. "There is nothing to worry about." Conversation died out once again, and the two drifted into a comfortable silence. The winter wind battered the shutters outside the derelict old flat. Boards and pipes creaked somewhere behind the walls, and the feeling of eyes upon them plagued poor Basil. They stayed in each other's company until the wee hours of the morning. And when they finally parted and returned to their homes, and Basil to his wife, they went woefully. Basil stayed vigilant on his long walk home through the city, yet he could not shake the sense of unseen eyes upon him. This feeling followed him step for step, until at last he reached the back door of his home and slid inside. It would be another 2 weeks before either man could break free of his obligations. Basil regrettably had to accompany his wife to the countryside to visit her sister, a biannual event that he always dreaded. Thaddeus found himself free of familial demands, but was trapped in his office by so many contracts and dealings that he nearly wished he'd go bankrupt just to save himself the trouble. Neither man could find even a second to steal away until well into the middle of March, when, breathless and ruddy-faced, the two found themselves rushing toward their clandestine apartment. "I wasn't aware," Thaddeus complained with a shudder, "that we'd taken up residence in the Arctic." He waited patiently for a glowing praise, or at least a pitying laugh from Basil for his quip, but none came. He found his lover instead with his back to him, clumsily attempting to remove a painting from the wall. When he'd finally dislodged it and teetered over backwards, Thaddeus ran to catch him. Basil corrected himself quickly, though, and pitched the painting with all his might toward the dimly glowing fire in the fireplace. "What are you doing?" demanded Thaddeus. The frame of the painting cracked and sputtered in the flames. The paper curled at its edges as it crumbled into ash. "The eyes, Tad," hissed Basil by way of explanation. "They can't see you, you daft bastard," Thaddeus chuckled in exasperation. He smoothed his hand down Basil's arm. "You'll drive yourself mad if you keep going like this. The paintings aren't watching us, Baz. No one is." Basil turned on him, gripped with fear. His eyes looked wild, frenzied. They called to mind the image of a spooked horse, ready to flee blindly in any direction in order to save its skin. "How can you know?" he demanded Thaddeus. "How can you be certain?" "Because, dear boy, I paid off the police. You know that. I told you." Basil's eyes, still lit with a spark of fear, traveled from Thaddeus's face back to the fire. The eyes of the painting were burning quickly away, blazing red-hot as they were scorched out of existence. A calm seemed to wash over him then. His shoulders sagged, yet he still did not meet Thaddeus's eyes. "One, you paid off Howell, and the money means nothing. He could turn on you, on us." "He won't," replied Thaddeus firmly. His hands brushed along Basil's jaw, urging him silently to face him. "We will be fine. He'd be a fool to try and ruin me. He knows the sway that I have over the city."
"Lucretia knows," Basil said plainly.
Thaddeus took a moment to recover. The fear traveled from Basil's eyes to his own in an instant.
"You told her?"
"Heavens, no!" Basil looked horror-struck. "Do you think I'm truly mad? No, I didn't tell her. But you should see how she looks at me in the mornings after I come home late. And I haven't touched her since Philip was born, and—" Basil's ramblings were cut off by a dull, solid thud from upstairs, as though a book were dropped on the floor. Thaddeus and Basil were struck dumb, and the two only shared a parting look of terror before they snatched their coats and tore out of the flat as fast as they could manage. Neither stopped running until they reached their respective houses, and neither could shake the feeling of being watched for weeks to come. Nearly 3 months passed before the lovers could meet again, and it was weighing heavily on them. Basil resembled more a wraith than a man. His eyes bore deep gray undercircles, and his skin waned from ruddy pink to a sallow, fishy white, and his clothes that had once fit him snugly now hung off his body like rags. He ate little, slept less, and spoke nearly not at all. Lucretia, who'd taken to filling in the silence by regaling him with the latest gossip, seemed to take great pleasure in informing Basil about the latest scandals. Her joy was most evident when informing him that two men he'd known in university had been discovered in an affair. She did kindly relay, though, that only one had been incarcerated. The other had been sent to an asylum,
to cure him of his homosexual afflictions as, like Lucretia thought, was the proper way to deal with those types. Everywhere he went, Basil felt a strange tightness around his neck, as though someone were holding him by the scruff. Everywhere he went, he felt the watchful eyes of what he hoped was God, following his every move. Thaddeus was not having it much better. Though he hid his anxieties much better than Basil did, they clouded his mind daily. It didn't help that old nasty rumors of his being a confirmed bachelor were cropping up again. Whether these rumors were true or not, Thaddeus did not much care for speculation on his marriage status to be passed around the tabloids. He did not feel eyes on him as Basil did, but he did feel tension in droves. It got so severe to the point that he nearly ruined a deal with a land broker, with an outburst of rage over a mild disagreement. He'd been able to smooth things over, but that did little to ease his nerves. At the beginning of June, Basil and Thaddeus found themselves not in their flat, but in Thaddeus's country home. Their dreary little hideaway in the city had long since been abandoned by the two of them, and had been taken over by the wastrels that usually milled about it. Thaddeus had been given the opportunity to invite Basil into his home under the pretense that they were brokering a deal. Basil had money to invest, and Thaddeus was under pressure to get it. Of course, neither man had business on the brain when they met on the front steps outside the household. It took all their strength not to embrace one another at first sight. It took even more strength for them to sit through false pleasantries and several courses of dinner, and by the time they had a moment to steal away, they were practically burning with a desire for a simple, long-awaited kiss. In the parlor after dinner, they finally got their wish. "Goodness, have I missed you," Basil whispered breathlessly, pressing his forehead to Thaddeus's. His eyes had fluttered closed, giving the impression that they'd sunken into his skull. Yet he looked, for the first time in months, at ease. "And I you, dear boy," murmured Thaddeus in response. His thumb traced over Basil's jaw, much more pronounced than the last time they'd been together. "You look ghastly, though." Basil let out a puff of air in lieu of a laugh. "Charming." "You know what I mean," Thaddeus huffed fondly. "You look as though you've been eaten by worry." "I have. I've wanted to see you, Tad, so terribly. But it's as though someone has been watching my every move. Part of me wonders if it's Lucretia. She's awfully vindictive, you know, and..." "If she were to expose us, it would ruin her name as well," Thaddeus pointed out. "She's not a stupid woman. We're fine, Basil dear. If someone were to catch us, they'd have done it already. No one knows about us, and no one is watching us." It took a moment for Basil to respond. As he collected his thoughts, he pulled Thaddeus into a slow, tight embrace. Basil's chin found its way to Thaddeus's shoulder. "You always sound so confident, so certain." "I am certain. No one will know of us, my dear boy, not if I can help it." Tenderly, he stroked his hand over Basil's graying hair. Neither noticed as the sky outside began to bleed from blue to pitch. When Basil spoke again, his voice was barely a whisper. "I love you." Thaddeus pulled back just enough to meet Basil's eyes. "I love you..." He cut himself off before he could finish. No longer were his eyes fixed on Basil's own. Now they traveled up past his head, squinting at the crown molding where the ceiling met the wall. "Tad?" Basil's voice was laced with gentle concern. He'd yet to follow Thaddeus's gaze. "What is it?" Thaddeus's mouth widened with his eyes, horror snatching his words and his breath in tandem. He watched in shock as blackness oozed slowly down the wallpaper, leaking between the cracks in the ceiling. It dripped in from the edges of the window, bled creepingly over the sills and onto the rug below. The fire, burning bright and orange in the fireplace, began to sizzle as thick droplets of black sludge dropped down the chimney. Thaddeus found himself mute, unable to form words when Basil asked him again. "Thaddeus, dear, you're scaring me. What is it?" The house began to rattle. It started first with the floor, a low rumble like a herd of animals was fast approaching from afar. Paintings shook off the walls, and vases crashed to the floor as the furniture wobbled in place. Then the window panes shook, immense pressure building behind them. The fireplace creaked, bricks shaking loose of their mortar until sludge began to ooze from between them, too. Basil now noticed what was happening around him, and glanced up into Thaddeus's fear-stricken face as panic began to take its hold. Tad, what is going... Before he could finish, Thaddeus pulled him into another tight embrace. The windows burst, the walls crumbled in on themselves, and the fireplace spit forth black ichor like a geyser. Thaddeus and Basil clung to each other in a torrent of darkness, and though they could no longer see each other, they could feel each other. They could feel, too, a pair of horrified eyes gazing down upon them through the blackness.
"Mom!" shouted a girl in fury, snatching her journal off the table. "Oops!" came her mother's flippant reply. She watched with mild frustration as the ink bottle overturned on the kitchen table, and subsequently her daughter's notebook. "You've got to be kidding me! I was almost done writing that chapter!" the girl cried in despair. Ink dripped down the pages. Who knew how much of her work had been destroyed? "I told you not to mess with that stuff at the table," her mother scolded, plopping a wad of paper towels onto the mess. "Dinner's almost ready, and this is going to be a pain to clean up." Sullenly, the girl began to help her mother clean up the spilled ink. She wiped off her fountain pen, blotted it, and dropped it on the counter. Then, turning to her ruined journal, she picked it up gingerly. It was utterly destroyed. As she carefully flipped through the sodden pages, she could barely pick out three words from the stained mess that now covered it. She sighed, and though she didn't really want to, she dropped the journal in the trash bin. "Oh well," the girl thought. "I guess it was only a rough draft."
"I'm back!"
"Did you bring the planchette?"
"Yep." "All right, let's give this a shot. Hello?"
"Hello."
"Okay, now we're getting somewhere. Have you been watching us?"
J-U-S-T-N-O-W.
Just now? But not before? No. Huh.
Ugh, this is a waste of time. I'll see myself out.
Looks like it's just you and me now, Bored. Do you want to play a game?" "Yes." "Okay, what games do you like?" O-X-Y-T-R-I-P-H-E-N-O.
Uncommon Commons was a podcast. It was written and recorded by George Plank and Alex Vitale. Our logo was designed by Sam Vitale, and our theme song was written by Charles Adam Robinson. Special thanks to our patrons, including Noel Son, who contributed at the $5 level, and all of our patrons who contributed at the $1 level, who get access to all of our bonus content. Get connected with us through social media at the link tree in the description below. Rate and review us wherever you get podcasts. Stay. And remember, nothing is real.